Accession number 32297, reel 14.
John Nixon, reel 14.
Right, a stupid story. I'd only flown a Barracuda for perhaps five or six times back with the squadron, and I was very much aware that the senior pilots were keeping an eye on me, making sure I was going to be up to scratch. And one of the exercises we had to do, we had to carry a dummy torpedo. The torpedo is slung underneath a Barracuda. It's not housed in inside the fuselage, it's just hung underneath. And the torpedo that you carry weighs about 1,600 pounds. Well, at this stage, we didn't have real torpedoes, but we had a great long tube of concrete which weighed about 1,600 pounds, and it was just like a huge concrete pipe. And I think, well, I'm sure it was concrete. I hope it wasn't asbestos. But anyway, it weighed a lot. And so the idea was this was hung underneath the aeroplane, and the CIO said, right, I want you to fly the aeroplane and get used to flying it carrying this weight, because we hadn't done that sort of thing before. He said, just be careful of this, that and the other. So off I taxied with this torpedo, this concrete slab underneath me. And I hadn't got very far around the perimeter track when I realised that I'd got a puncture. I don't know how this can possibly have happened. I don't think I was overusing the brakes or anything like that. But I realised that things weren't right, so of course I stopped and switched off and came back to the crew room. I think they must have seen by then, so, not to worry, we'll soon have this fixed. And I sort of just relaxed in the crew room, and off went the maintenance lads to sort it out. In due course, they came back and they changed the wheel and this, that, and that. Okay, Dixon, you can off you go again. So I get out and I climb in and I take off. And I fly around for half an hour, which I'd been told, very, very gently, because I've got to be careful of this extra weight. And came back to land very, very gently. You couldn't take too many chances. Taxied in very, very gently. And settled down, and there's the CO and the senior pilot and the senior observer standing there absolutely in stitches. How did you get on, said the CO? How did you? Oh, I said, I didn't find it too difficult. It handled quite normally. He said, well, I expect you did, because he said you didn't take the torpedo with you. I mean, you can't believe how stupid you can be. Obviously, when they changed the wheel, they took this lump of concrete off the aeroplane, and I had assumed that they put it back when they said everything's ready for you to go. How could you climb in an aeroplane without checking that you'd got the piece? But I'd done it. I'd taken off without the... So I feature in the squadron song.
So the exercise then is just to familiarise you with what it's like to be carrying a torpedo and how the aircraft might handle differently.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Just to get used to, the extra weight. I suppose I must have done it right in the end, but I don't remember it being too difficult.
Did it handle much differently with a torpedo on board? Is it a noticeable thing, really?
Not really noticeable. I suppose when you're labouring up to 10,000 feet or whatever, it takes a bit longer when you're carrying that sort of load. But no, it doesn't make that much difference.
What other types of exercises were you doing in that initial period?
In that initial period, we used to, I think we managed to get out over a bit of sea somewhere. We were fairly well inland, of course. I think one of the exercises, we had to get used to flying low over the sea, which sounds easy, but it can be difficult in certain light conditions. You've got that sort of thing. We did, I don't think we did any night flying while we were at Stretton. We were only there until the end of June. So it was really just a question of getting to know one another, and just getting to know the aircraft.
Had your opinion differed from the reputation of the Barracuda when you, once you started to fly it?
I don't think so, because I'd never had an experience of flying anything better at that stage. I mean, this was what we'd got, and we weren't the only squadron with them. I mean, they were in widespread use. So what was the point of complaining? You just got on with it, you know.
Where did you move to at the end of June?
Well, this was when things started to get quite exciting then. By then, of course, we were quite happy flying in formation, and we'd got various flights and things worked out. And but at the end of June, we all said goodbye to Stretton, and we flew in formation up to Crail, which is on the north coast of the Firth of Forth. Not too far from Edinburgh, but on the other side of the Forth from there. A lovely place for an airfield, right out on the East Nuke, they call it. You can still see the airfield there today. It doesn't, it's not operating as an airfield, but it's a lovely part of the world. And we all arrived there as a squadron, and that was the torpedo school. HMS Jackdaw, it was, at Royal Naval Air Station, Crail. And, of course, the normal course bodies were coming through, as I've explained, the normal chap, but we were a squadron. And Cedric Coxon, our CO, had been an instructor on at Crail before he took over our squadron. So he trained us in torpedo dropping. With a bit of help from the station staff, obviously. But that was our job for the next 2 months, I think we were there. And we just really just concentrated on how to drop torpedoes as individuals, as a flight, as a squadron. And we did it by day, we did it by night. And just interspersed with that, just to break up the monotony, as it were, there was dive bombing and general flying, that sort of thing.
Can we go through that training, that torpedo training, from how you started to learn about how to do it and how that progressed onwards?
You're asking an awful lot, really. How can you remember how it was done? I mean, I think basically the first thing you did is learn to fly over the sea at a fairly low altitude. I can't remember exactly the heights, but you had to be able to judge your height above the sea. It sounds easy, but it's not entirely easy.
How do you do that?
I don't know. How do you drive your car without running into the curb?
Is it just a matter of judgment, really?
Just really judgment, yeah. It's just a question of judgment. You have your altimeter, but the ordinary altimeter is not accurate below about, 50 feet? I can't remember exactly. So you can rely on your altimeter to a certain extent, and always remembering that if you're diving, there's always a lag. The altimeter will lag. So if you're actually flying at 100 feet, your altimeter might be showing 200 feet. So you've got to be very well aware. These are all things that any pilot will understand, not just a torpedo pilot. You allow for the lag in the way the altimeter works, which is done on air pressure, you see, on barometric pressure. So you first of all just learn how to fly low over the sea. Then I take it you probably did it in formation with two or three others. And then I don't think we did any more carrying lumps of concrete round. I don't remember that at Crail.
You mentioned, though, the sea can sometimes have different conditions that can make that judgment
yes.
quite difficult.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a broken sea with nice waves and little white capped, you know, what they call white horses on, that's quite easy to judge how high you are. But if you've got a dead, smooth, calm sea with the light from the sun or from the moon or no whatever, it can be very very upsetting. You can't easily judge it unless you can actually see some movement in the sea. That was my memory anyway.
And if you're flying in formation across the sea, does somebody take the lead or do you...
Oh yes, there's always a leader. Any formation, doesn't matter where you are, any time, there's always somebody in charge, somebody's leading, and the other aircraft formate on him. So that's just a practice that you do anyway.
So initially they get you again to run over the sea, to individually fly over the sea, to do it in formation, to get that used to doing that type of manoeuvre.
Yeah, to get used to being flying over the sea. After all, don't forget we were fleet air arm pilots and we were going to spend most of our lives flying over the sea, so we got pretty used to it.
It might be a strange question, but are there pilots who don't get used to flying over the sea?
I can't remember that exactly. There must have been some, of course, that came to a sticky end or did something for some reason you never really knew. But I can't say that that was a particular problem.
Once you'd done that training, did you then? You said you didn't practice with the dummy torpedoes.
No,
at that stage.
No, you didn't because. I don't remember flying with a concrete torpedo at Crail. Maybe we did, but I don't remember it. But there was a certain series of exercises we had to go through. Like any form of training, there's a certain schedule of things which we did. But the final outcome of it was what you then did. Did you? Yeah, well, we must have had a dummy torpedo. I'm just thinking. Anyway, we must have carried something. It must have been a concrete torpedo. I must have misled you a bit on that, because when we got on to the actual training, we then learnt to attack a ship as a squadron. In the traditional way, if that's the way. And this... without getting too technical, you'd fly in line astern. In other words, one aircraft flying immediately behind the other, probably at about, I don't know, 100-yard intervals. Not close formation. So let's say you were 100 yards behind the chap in front and you flew, and the CO was always leading, or the senior pilot. And you'd hope to get up to about 10,000 feet if the cloud conditions were such that allowed it. And you'd fly along in line astern, and down below you there was a target ship. They had a target ship, like one I'd been on when I was a naval airman. And you flew parallel to it. And then at a certain point that was purely up to the leader to judge, you then dived. You put the dive brakes on, the Barracuda, and you dived, not exactly vertically, but probably at a 70-degree angle, which is coming down a bit quick. And as you can imagine, when you're diving, when you're flying in normal line astern, you're looking straight ahead at the chap in front of you. When you're diving like this, and you're diving in parallel, you've got to look at him through the top of the cockpit. So it takes a bit of getting used to, because you don't want to get too close to him. So you're diving straight down as steeply as you possibly can, and then at a certain point, probably at about 200 or 300 feet, a bit more than that, probably at 1,000 feet, I would guess. I'm trying to remember that you would turn. Or you would turn in parallel, so that you're then in line abreast, and you pull out, and you're heading directly at the target. So if there were six aircraft starting off, you're six of you coming charging like the light brigade, and this is where it became extremely difficult and became. Where lots of accidents happen, because as you come into the dive, you select dive brakes on. And the Barracuda had got these peculiar dive brakes, which were flaps underneath the wings, which instead of dropping, lowering for normal landing and takeoff, in a dive brake situation, these came up. They lifted upwards, which stopped a lot of the airflow. And when you selected the dive brakes on, you had to retrim the aircraft violently, quite violently. You had a trimming wheel down by your left-hand side, like a little, about the size of a small pram wheel, I suppose. And when you put the dive brakes on, you had to wind this thing at least twice round to enable you to keep the nose down. So when you've levelled off and you're running at the target and you have to then take the dive brakes off, you've immediately got to wind this wheel back at least two times. So that was, and if you didn't, I mean, you couldn't hold the plane without trimming it out. I mean, you could just go straight into the sea. So you wound this trimmer back to get the plane more balanced, and that's when the dive brakes came off. You then had to line up on the target. You had to sight onto the target. You had a little gadget. I don't know which side it was on, but it was, let's call it a little gizmo thing. And you had to judge, looking at the target, you had to judge whether the target was going to be turning towards you or away from you. And you judged that by looking at the wake of the ship. You could follow the wake of the ship. And you set that either towards or away on this little gizmo, which was then related to the torpedo itself. So you did that. What else did you have to do? The speed of the target was decided normally by the flight leader. He would work it out. And you set that. I mean, suppose it was going at 15 knots or something. You would set, that would be set before you started the dive. So you didn't have to worry about that. But having got attacking, running towards the target, you had to retrim the aircraft. You had to line it up on the thing. You had to set your little gizmo. You had to watch your height. And I'm trying to remember. I think we had to fly not higher than 100 feet to drop the torpedo. May have been less, but I can't remember that. But and you had to get the speed down, and I think the speed was 120 knots. So this, you judge, the speed was controlled by the air brakes coming off, because if you took them off too soon, you'd probably go too fast. but that was how there was an awful lot to be doing in a very short space of time. Apart from that, you'd got the other aircraft all heading in the same direction, all pilots all concentrating on doing all these things. And in a squadron attack, you've got six more aircraft coming the other direction, coming from the other side of the target. And if you were doing a wing attack, you had two squadrons doing this and a third squadron actually dive bombing. I mean, that was how we were trained. We never ever put it into practice, but there was an awful lot going on.
Once you've done your attack or your practice attack,
yeah,
how do you come out of that attack and away from the ship?
With great relief. The other thing I haven't mentioned, of course, you've got to judge how far away from the target you are. I can't remember, but you dropped your torpedo reasonably close to the target, maybe 500-600 yards or something like that. And then You had to break away as quickly as possible. You didn't break straight upwards because if it was an enemy battleship or something you were attacking, they'd shoot at you. Well, they shoot at you anyway. But you normally would have just banked hard to port or starboard and tried to present a smaller target to the gunners on the ship as you could. It was not something to be recommended, and I'm glad I never had to do it.
And in your banking, I take it everybody else is doing
everybody
the same
else.
Thing at the same
oh
time.
Yes, it's every man for himself, and it's absolute chaos. And it could be. You imagine aeroplanes coming in all directions. It's like the Red Arrows, and they're doing it to order.
And with the squadron attack, of course, you'd have doubled the number of aircraft actually making an attack.
Yeah,
and would
yeah.
they be banking the similar way or any other way? Or
well, I don't know whether we were ever told which way to break away. I don't know. I can't remember that. But, you know, the ultimate way, probably, the best way to describe it is if you were a fully worked up squadron, let's say there were 12 aircraft, it might work that four of you flew up one side of the target, four flew up the other side of the target, and then the third four stayed slightly behind, and they positioned themselves depending on which way the target turned. So in that way, between 12 aircraft, four from that side, four from that side, another four, you had a fair chance of hitting something. And then having done that, as I've said, when we were finally worked up as a full wing, you had three squadrons from different ships, and they would... And I say we probably have two squadrons doing the torpedo work and one squadron dive bombing or whatever. But we never got that far.
You mentioned that you didn't use the concrete filled dummy torpedoes. Did you drop torpedoes at all that were with a dummy warhead that actually acted
yes,
as a torpedo?
Yes, we did. Normally, I mean, when we were practicing, we just dropped smoke bombs just so that they could see where we dropped and they could work out whether we were too close, too far away or whatever. But when we must have had concrete torpedoes because I've got in my logbook a dummy torpedo attack, which may mean that we didn't carry anything, we just pretended, you know, but we could have had these concrete ones. But eventually, when we were considered to be competent, they put a proper torpedo on. Obviously, it didn't have a warhead, it had just the right weight of something, so it didn't have a warhead. And you drop this, and the target and the torpedo ran, and it would never actually hit the target ship because it was always programmed to go underneath it, so it wouldn't actually hit the ship. And the idea was, if you done it correctly, it would run underneath the target. It would come to the end of its run when its compressed air or whatever it was driven on came, and then it would come to the surface. And when it came to the surface, it let a plume of smoke or something out, and the little boats could go and pick it up because they were highly expensive things, torpedoes. But they didn't let you drop a proper torpedo until they thought you could do it correctly, and I didn't. Real torpedo attacks like that practice. I must have got something badly wrong with the attitude of the aeroplane, too high, too fast, or something or other, or I might have been not level, because when my torpedo hit the water, it broke, and I wasn't terribly popular.
With the torpedo, then, is there a prescribed method then, that it has to go in at a certain angle at a certain height? Is there...
Yes, I mean the torpedo has got an air tail on it. It's just like a bit of, I was going to say balsa wood, but it's a very lightweight wooden tail which breaks off as soon as it hits the water. That tail is merely to act, keep it like a dart so that it flies dead straight. And it enters the water at a fairly shallow angle. And that angle, of course, depends on you flying at the right height and keeping the aircraft level. If you've got the nose up in the air, it's going to come and hit tail first, which is probably what happened to that one of mine. Or if you've got the nose down, it might just go straight in. It takes an awful lot of practice, and I don't know how many, what percentage of those that we dropped actually ran correctly, but one would like to think that they did run quite well.
I mean, because it's another thing to think of, isn't it? In the complex manoeuvre you were talking about, at the end of it, you still have to get that torpedo into the water at the right angle to...
At the right angle, the right speed, and the right height, yeah. And you've got your hands full. I've often said to my chums who did it, there's the one time you really needed two pairs of hands. You really did. And goodness knows how many pairs of eyes to make sure somebody wasn't going to run into you.
You mentioned that that was the occasion when quite a lot of accidents occurred. Was that period?
Yeah.
Did anything occur while you were practicing with your squadron, or was it?
No. We didn't have any. We didn't have any major problems there. I think mainly because Cedric Cotson, our CO, was an expert at this, and he just would not tolerate any bad flying at all. We followed him implicitly. He was absolutely brilliant, so I can't speak highly enough of him. I don't know about other squadrons whether they had the same experience, but we considered we were pretty good. In fact, I've written some memoirs and I say we were the first and we were the best. I don't think I'm very popular. But
at Crail, was there any form of simulator that you could use?
Yes, there was. Yes, there was I think it was called a torpedo attack trainer. A friend of mine who sadly passed away 2 or 3 years ago, he remembers it very well, and I think somebody asked him to write a paper about it. I can't remember too much about it, except that it was a great big building. And all round the walls were painted, it was painted like a sea, and targets would move across it. To be perfectly honest, Richard, I don't remember actually ever using it, but I think the idea was it was to keep you out of mischief. If the weather was bad and you couldn't fly, they'd put you in this torpedo attack trainer, I think it was called. And you would press the button and do things according to the book you've been told, and then they would analyse and they'd say, well, you wouldn't hit the ship because you were miles out of range, or this, whatever.
But it was just an added...
It was just an added thing, and I think it was probably staffed by Wrens, so a lot of the lads probably like to go there for reasons other than training. But we won't go into that.
Yeah.